Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, here we are, hour two. See how fast the show goes by. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call. 888-914-9149. You can call now. We'll get you on the air. Let's start off with Joshua. Not in Joshua Tree, but in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Joshua.
Good morning, Patrick. I was hearing on a Marion named pretty famous Catholic radio station the other day that the Beatles were Satanists because to throw away our Sgt. Pepper's albums because you've heard this before, the Aleister Crowley being on there, and then that Paul McCartney said that he admired Aleister Crowley. So just wondering what you thought about that.
Yeah, I think that's silly. I would just disregard that. Yeah, I'm aware that Aleister Crowley had a picture on the Sgt. Pepper tableau behind them, as did W.C. Fields, as did all kinds of other people. And I know a fair amount about the Beatles. I've read quite a bit, and there's nothing in their stories individually, or certainly not as a group, that would in any way corroborate the notion that they were Satanists. They were just confused young men who were at the peak of their physical powers and the peak of fame and fortune and women and drugs and money and private planes and popularity and all that. And they, although had been baptized, and Paul McCartney and George Harrison, by the way, were baptized Catholics, they had lost their way. And by their own admission, they claimed to be agnostics. But at no time did they ever... There's no evidence in any way to suggest that they ever were Satan worshipers per se. So whoever said that, I think, is just probably well-meaning, I guess, but misguided, and I would just ignore that. So no, I would definitely not burn a Sgt. Pepper album or anything like that. There you have it, Joshua. I hope that helps. Let's go to Vanna now in LaGrange, Illinois. Good morning, Vanna. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. I think you're such a blessing to like and my family. And I just would really appreciate your advice. And God bless you and what you're doing.
Thank you.
So my question is in regarding the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5:23 specifically. Yeah. And sorry, I got like three toddlers yelling at me.
No doubt. This is kind of reminds me, speaking of the Beatles, of Lady Madonna, children at your feet, wonders how you managed to make them eat or something like that. Make ends meet. I should know that lyric. Go ahead, Vanna. Don't mean to get in your way.
So appropriate. Hang on, Jacqueline. Hang on. So my question is, the part regarding leave your gifts at the altar, reconcile with your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Mm-hmm. So am I at fault, and is my husband at fault for taking the Eucharist while not speaking to my husband's sister? She's one boy between three girls. There's been issues in the family, and I'm like very confrontational. Yeah. And we'll ask, what did I do? We'll apologize. Give me 1 minute. We'll apologize and like, just tell me what I did. And it's just crickets. There's nothing I did. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I think it's that we love Jesus. We love our faith. I know people can't see like their fault, but I've like genuinely asked like, what's the issue? Mm-hmm. Let's move forward. Cause I want my husband to have his sisters because I wouldn't want any friction in the future for my children. I would never want like a spouse to like bring animosity. So I've kept it like pretty nice throughout the years, even when I've been disrespected and insulted and body shamed during a pregnancy, like all this ignorant stuff. So ultimately I'm like, My husband's not speaking to his sisters. I don't feel bad not talking to them, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like I don't harbor any hate. I really don't. I've been a part of the family for like almost like 8 years now.
Okay.
So it's been okay because I've allowed it to be okay, and I haven't made big issues out of small things. But it just got to a point where I'm like, come on. And my husband, I know it hurts him. You know, he's the only boy. He doesn't have a brother. So I just don't know. I'm like, are we at fault for taking the Eucharist? Am I like, I'm fasting. I'm like, I feel like I don't want to be a hypocrite, and like, I'm not going to go reconcile with them because they don't want reconciliation. And then I can't apologize because I can give them a list of what they've done to me, but they can't say, I've even asked my mother-in-law, like, just tell me what it is. I'll move forward. I'll apologize. And there's nothing. It's just like crickets. So I'm like, it's just ultimately they think I'm like, you know, as you say, like the holy roller, and they think, and I don't even push, like they're Greek Orthodox raised, but they all married Catholics. So, but they're, it's more like by name, and like I get the eye rolls, like for anything, how I like do things with my children. It's just, I think ultimately it's just that they have a perception of me and regarding like just loving our church and stuff like that. Because there's no other reason. I think I'm likable, but maybe
I do
not.
Too.
I don't know.
I do too, Vanna, for what it's worth. All right. Well, given what you've said, my thoughts are, number one, that this is like any other family weirdness. All families have weirdness, and this just happens to be part of what's in your family. And you just do the best you can. Sometimes these relationships are not salvageable, or they can't be the kind that you would like them to be. But as to your specific question about, are you committing a sin by going to Holy Communion, even though this barrier exists between you and your sister-in-law, I don't see any reason to think that it should, because you're not holding anything in your heart against her. The practical effects of this oddness in the relationship is that she won't speak to you, and you know, that the things that you just described. But the essence of what the Bible is talking about there, where we would say we need to put this offering down and then go reconcile before we receive communion, that would apply to you if you were harboring a grudge in your heart against her. It doesn't mean that you can't feel wounded or that you can't feel offended, because that's human. But if you can honestly say, and I'm sure you can, that you've forgiven her and you have no ill will against her, and if things could be better, you would welcome that. They're not, but you would welcome that if they could be. There's nothing there on your part, given those circumstances, that would prevent you from receiving Holy Communion, because you're not sinning against her. You're not harboring a grudge against her. You're just kind of dealing with how things are, and that's not a sin on your part. You've done what you can do. So, yeah, I don't see any reason to be worried about that.
I feel like my husband, I feel like he's obviously going to protect our household and our marriage, you know, because they were coming to him and initiating issues. And it's tale as old as time, in-law issues. I never thought I'd have them, but I do. And I feel like him not speaking, because we've put like the, you know, like he pretty much said, like, if you can't respect my wife, you know, this is the guard that's here, and like, I'm protecting our home. And like, he's removing himself from their presence, but ultimately it's his family. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it's like his sisters, and that's all he has. Mm-hmm. So he's right to do that.
His priorities are well placed, because he has an obligation to protect you, and you come first, and his relationship with you comes first. So, you know, you're very fortunate to have a husband who sees it that way. He loves his family, but he's not going to allow you to be savaged by their bad behavior.
Yeah.
Kudos to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So, okay. So he's not like I just don't want to cause, I know I'm not like the cause of the drama, but ultimately it is me that they have an issue with. So I didn't want him to like be at fault for what like kind of I'm causing, even though we are one in a sense, but still it just feels,
well, you're in it together. You're in it together. So the two of you are weathering this storm, and it's uncomfortable. And yeah, I mean, I haven't been in exactly that same situation, but I mean, I've been in similar situations where you just have to, like the two of you are, you're pulling together and you're moving forward. And if people want to be weird, okay, you know, I forgive you, be weird on your own time, but you don't have to You don't have to put yourself in their presence and unnecessarily deal with that if that's how they want to be. You have a right to be free from it if you can be.
Okay, so like we're not, because I mean, we pretty much like go over there when they're not, there's three sisters, so it's not just like one angry person. So we go over there to see his parents and stuff.
Yeah, conflict avoidance, sometimes that's the best you can do. Let me leave you with a thought, Vanna. This is from the Bible, and check this out. This is what St. Paul describes. Let me just read it to you. So he loved the Jews and he loved the Gentiles and he did everything he could to help them get to heaven. And here's what he says in 2 Corinthians 11. He says, I've had far greater labors, far more imprisonments, countless beatings, often near death. 5 times I have received at the hands of the Jews the 40 lashes, less one. That's referring to where they would flog you right up to the point of death and then stop. And he had this happen 5 times, flogged within an inch of his life. He says, 3 times I have been beaten with rods. Once I was stoned, and he doesn't mean weed. 3 times I have been shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been adrift at sea, on frequent journeys in danger from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brethren, in toil and hardship through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And apart from these other things, there is also the daily pressure upon me of my anxiety for all the churches. Who is weak, and I am not weak? Who is made to fall, and I am not indignant? If I must boast, he says, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. The reason I go through that litany that he gives us is, think about all of that. All of the suffering, all of the attacks, all of the wounds that he sustained, and he just kept on going, and he did the best he could. So I've never been beaten with rods. I've never been shipwrecked. I've never spent a day adrift at sea. I've never had any of these things happen to me. Hope I never do. And so that gives me a sense of perspective when I think about, oh, poor me. And I'm not saying that about you, Vanna, but there have been moments when I thought, oh, poor me, I have to go through this. And then I think about what St. Paul went through, and there's no comparison. So I figure that if he can go through those things and keep smiling and keep loving and keep dealing with the people who are driving him crazy, well, I can try to do that as well. So I'm just suggesting that, Vanna, because I personally have found that passage helpful to me. So I offer it to
you. Thank you. Yes, thank you so much. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Great talking to you. I'm glad. Thank you. Well, it's too early for a break, so let's go to another phone call. And the number, by the way, 888-914-9149. You can call now. We had a line just open up. Call now, 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Miami and talk to Lewis. Good morning, Lewis. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you doing?
I am well, thank you.
Patrick, I always listen to you in the morning and nighttime. We pray, and now that's the way I go to sleep. I'm very depressed. I have anxiety attack, and I sometimes I have my mind to, you know, take my life. But I pray. When I pray, I come down, and that thought that goes to my mind goes away.
Okay.
But there's days that I can't. I see a psychiatrist. He's sending me medication, but days that I can't take it.
What's causing you to feel these feelings?
About 3 years ago or something like that, I had a surgery. I fell from a tree. I had 3 discs, and I had to get an operation. Since then, I've been with a lot of pain. I've been seeing like 3 different doctors.
Okay.
And since then, I've been getting this pain, and I can't take the pain. And now I'm getting very depressed. I'm not getting better.
Okay.
I'm not getting better, and my family sees it. That's my first question.
Your family,
my
what?
Second question, my family is suffering seeing me like this.
I see. Okay. Got it.
And I have another question.
Okay.
I believe I'm a great God. I have a Caridad de Cobre. That's my saint.
Mm-hmm.
And I love God, but don't understand why God takes the good people away from us. Like, for example, the bishop from California, they kill him for no reason at all.
Yeah.
Why did God allow that to happen if it, good people. Mm-hmm. Takes them away, and that, you know, that put things in my mind.
I understand. So you're suffering with several different things, including the pain from this injury, and also wondering about why does God let bad things happen to good people? Would that be a fair way of saying it? Okay.
Yes. Yes, sir. Yes.
All right. Well, let's deal with the first point first. And I'm looking at the clock, Luis, and I realize that because I'm now at a point where I have to take a break, if you don't mind, can we just press pause and I'll come back to you right after this break and we'll pick it up from there?
No problem.
So we'll do that. Just stand by.
Okay.
And I'll come right back to you on the other side of this quick timeout. You're listening to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app, and I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. This hour is sponsored by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union, where you can boost your savings with their 14-month share certificate, earning a 4.14% annual percentage yield. Info at relevantradio.com/certificate.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on.
Let's see. I was talking to Luis in Miami. Luis, thanks for holding over the break. And let me recap what I heard you say, and you tell me if I have it right, if I've missed anything. So number one, you mentioned that you were injured in an accident. You fell up from a tree. My gosh. And you've been in pain physically for the years since then, and you're still in pain. It's debilitating and it's making you very depressed. And you did mention, correct me if I'm wrong, but you did mention that there are times when you feel like taking your own life. So I want to zero in on that. And then you also mentioned that you feel a great deal of weight, and I forget exactly how you put it, you'll have to tell me, but you're really bothered by how innocent people die. And you mentioned Bishop O'Connell in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, who was murdered a couple of weeks ago. So do I have that right? Am I missing any part of your question?
No. You're correct, yes.
Okay. Well, let's start off, first of all, with the pain of your injury. And for what it's worth, in my life, thankfully, I have not, with one exception, I have never had to deal with chronic pain that lasted more than a few hours. But chronic pain that doesn't go away was always just kind of theoretical to me until I had a bout with the shingles. And I thought I was, you know, a tough guy and I could just tough it out and deal with it and I'd be okay. And it just broke me, because after 3, 4, 5 days, I couldn't take the pain anymore. It was just too much. And I learned something I'd never really learned before. And many people have far worse pain than that, but that was enough. It was more than I had ever experienced before for an extended period of time. I gained a profound respect and, you know, empathy for people, perhaps like you, who are in worse pain and it doesn't go away and you can't find relief from it. So for what it's worth, brother, I have a little bit of an understanding of what you're going through. And I want you to know that your desire to be free from that pain is a prayer that God will hear. And he may not answer it in exactly the time or the way that you're hoping for, but he hears your prayer. He hears your prayers of suffering and your desire to be free from the physical pain that you're experiencing. So first thing I'd like to do, number one, is give you a number. You probably already have it, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. It's 988. Do you have a pen? You can jot that down. Okay, 988.
Yeah, okay.
That's the suicide hotline for people in your situation who are talking about it, thinking about it, wondering about it. These people are trained to help you process these thoughts so that you don't do something terrible like take your own life. So please, when we're done talking, you know, maybe as soon as you hang up with me, the thing to do would be to call them and start the process of getting some help with that, okay?
Yes, I will.
Okay. Please do that. Don't put it off and don't be stupid like I was thinking I could tough it out. And I'll just tough it out and I'll be okay. It doesn't work. Secondly, if you have if you haven't already, I would then recommend you get into some type of therapy with a good Catholic therapist who can help you by talking this stuff out, talking it through, give you some suggestions, some strategies and things that you can do. There's a great deal there that can help, but you have to plug in with a therapist. Now, I'd recommend, since you're in the Archdiocese of Miami, I would recommend you go to the Archdiocesan website, and I'll tell you what it is. Let's just take a quick look here. So it's the Archdiocese of Miami, and the website is Miami Arch, M-I-A-M-I-A Arch, miamiarch.org. So when you go there, plug into, they have different offices and ministries, and they have one for charities. And go to that section and get in touch with that office and tell them that you need a referral for a good Catholic therapist, and they'll be able to help you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. MiamiArch.org. So those are some practical steps you can take right there. And there's really nothing that I would presume to do or say on the radio that would in any way substitute for people like that who are qualified, who can help right now. Get in touch with them ASAP. Now, as far as the question you raised about Bishop O'Donnell being murdered, it was extremely shocking for so many people. And I met him on several occasions, but I didn't know him. I spoke to him a few times, and he was very polite and very friendly and all that, but I didn't know him. But the people who know him are suffering terribly because it's just such a senseless thing. Now, the reasons behind this crime, whatever they are, and it could just be the madness of the guy who killed him, they haven't been made known yet. So perhaps eventually there'll be more that we can understand about what happened. But in the meantime, even though that doesn't really matter, ultimately he was murdered, and murder is always wrong. So for you to react to that and say, why does God allow this? That's a very typical, normal human reaction. So don't feel like there's something weird going on that you're grappling with this issue, because if you're really human, and you are obviously, you're naturally going to feel this pain of why, God, why did you do this? Why did you not do this? Why did you allow this to happen? And that's a mystery called the problem of evil. Now, it's not a mystery in the sense that, Luis, that you can't know anything about it. It's a mystery in the sense that you and I can't know everything about it. We can know some things about it, that we can say these things are true. And yet there's more to it that is beyond our ability to fathom. So this is where trusting in God comes in. You have to trust that, as the Bible says, all things work for the good for those who love God. Even things that in themselves are terrible, like murder and tsunamis and cancer and things of that nature, we reel in grief at these things, because we say to ourselves, if I were in charge, I wouldn't let that happen. So if God is really all loving and if he's really all powerful, why does evil exist? And some people make the mistake of going down the road and saying, well, because evil exists, therefore there can't be a God, because if he really existed, he would put a stop to it. So that's not the right answer. The right answer, it seems to me, Luis, is that God, in creating us as human beings, he endows us with free will. And you know from having free will that you can choose yes or no. You can choose for God or against God. But when you choose against God, and we call that sin, It's like throwing a rock in a pond, and the water will ripple out. And in the same way, our human free will choices to commit sin, they have effects on other people. They have a ripple effect, and other people, innocent people, can be harmed by the free will sinful actions of human beings. So what we're experiencing here in this life is God, who is above all of this, outside of it, he sees it in a perfect all-at-once manner. We don't, of course. For us, it's very mysterious, and we don't understand how this connects with that and all that. But one thing we can say for sure is that because God respects our free will, he made us to be free so that we could respond in love to him. If we weren't free, we couldn't love him. We would just be robots. But because we're free, we can choose against him. So when that man who killed Bishop O'Connell did what he did, I mean, you don't need me to remind you that it caused tremendous suffering and pain for countless people, not just Bishop O'Connell. I mean, he's the one who was the primary victim, but this evil action victimized countless other people like yourself who are now grieving for this, and you're wondering why would God allow it. So this problem of evil, if anything, it points us to the existence of God, because we know that we couldn't really talk about it as evil. We could just say we don't like that. If there was no God and there's nothing above nature, there are just things that we like and we don't like. And yet we do know instinctively that there are some things that are inherently evil. Whether people like them or not, they're evil. And that points us to the realization that there is something above this natural order. We say that that's God. But in the meantime, as you're processing this, there's nothing wrong with asking God, Lord, why did you allow this? Why did you allow this? And to express your pain or your uncertainty to the Lord. And I can say, Luis, that in this life, we will not understand it entirely, and maybe not even at all. And there are people who live lives of great pain because they've lost a loved one or something else terrible has happened, and they don't get an answer from God in the way that they would like. But as Jesus said, Luis, remember this, in heaven, all your tears will be wiped away. He says, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. And our tears will be wiped away, and the things that are so mysterious to us now will become clear then, and we'll understand what was God doing in the background that we didn't understand in this life. So let me leave you with a book, Luis. It's called Making Sense Out of Suffering by Peter Kraft. Since you're writing down a few other things, write this down too, please. Making Sense Out of Suffering.
Okay. Making Sense Out of Suffering.
Right. Mm-hmm. Peter Kraft. His last name is spelled K-R-E-E-F-T.
Okay.
Now that's a whole book on this one specific issue. I think you're really going to find it helpful. So maybe you can just sit with it, meditate upon it, think about it, maybe take it with you to the Blessed Sacrament at a local church and just share all of these concerns with Jesus. And that book will, I think, help clarify your thinking on this issue. I know it has for many other people.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. And that hotline number again, 988. Please do call that, okay?
I'm going to call right now. Thank you. God bless you.
You got it, Luis. God bless you, too. Call me back in a few weeks, okay? I just want to make sure you're doing okay. Give me a call back.
Okay.
Thank you. Let's go now to Will in Wisconsin. Hi, Will.
Patrick, hi. How are you? Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Thank you.
Okay, great. First of all, love the show. Love Relevant Radio. Have learned so much from you guys since somebody turned me on to you like 15 years ago. And I appreciate everything that you guys do.
Thank you, Will. We appreciate hearing that.
You're welcome. I'm calling as a follow-up on discussion you had last week with a woman who called in about an annulment.
Okay.
You probably remember the call. I think she said it was the second time she called, and she was clearly disappointed that her marriage had not been annulled.
Yeah.
And I'm in sort of the opposite situation from her. My wife moved out and filed for separation in 2015, filed for divorce in 2019, and I received notification that she filed for an annulment in November of 2021, and we're still going through that.
Okay.
And It was funny because I got a letter from the diocese where she filed it the day after I listened to this on the radio. But I was disturbed by the number of annulments that are granted that you said. And, I mean, it really disturbed because I don't think she has grounds for an annulment. And to me, you know, I still consider myself, well, I don't consider, I'm still married to her. And, you know, it's scandalous, and the whole thing has been incredibly traumatic, not just for me, but our kids.
Yeah.
I did the research, you know, and I did find some numbers. So apparently, of all the annulments in the United States, about 15% of them fall out where people don't fall through or they withdraw. But of the remaining 85%, you're right. I mean, it's well over 90% get approved. Mm-hmm. And then of the ones that don't get approved, that get appealed, almost 90% of the ones in appeal get approved. So when you look at the numbers, it's just staggering how many are getting approved. Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned it, you know, there's what the grounds for annulment are. There's what the lack of form, impediment, and then inability to consent. And the articles that I read talked about the inability to consent. There's a lot of controversy because that's where the majority of annulments are granted. And, of course, that's the grounds that my wife is filing under as well. So,
and is she alleging that you are the one who brought the impediment to the marriage? Or
she's alleging that she had the mental defect.
Got it.
And okay. I don't want to go into details on it. But as with many of the mental defects that people allege, there are things, common things, you know, family of origin issues and stuff like that, that married couples deal with all the time without getting separated, divorced, and having a marriage annulled, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so it just floors me. And without giving too much away, we're in two different dioceses right now. And the diocese that she filed in appears to be somewhat of an annulment mill. My diocese is much more orthodox. And I got an advocate in my diocese because the one they were trying to sign me out of her diocese, I had to explain to that advocate Catholic teaching on marriage because it was mm-hmm. she wanted me to sign the paperwork to say we could get a null. Anyway, that's an aside. But, you know, my advocate now said, you know, in our diocese, we wouldn't even take in this. There's no basis for an annulment here.
Okay. But so let me, if I may... If I may, Will, just because of time, I'm at a point where I got to take a break. I know you're leading up to a question.
Right.
Why don't we do this? I'll take a quick break, formulate your thoughts in the form of a question, and then as soon as I come back, I'll go straight to you and we'll take it from there. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
I saw these guys in concert doing the Rumors Tour in 1977.
What?
Yeah. It was awesome. At the Forum in Los Angeles. Let's get back to the phones. 888-914-9149. That's the number to call. 888-914-9149. We're going to go back to Will now in Wisconsin. Will, thank you for your patience holding over the break. And you are going to, now that we have the background about the annulment things that we discussed or that you mentioned, so what's the next step now?
So the question I have, and I'm sorry I went off there, but is what, if anything, are the bishops doing to try and put more structure or clarity around this mental defect thing? It just seems to me that this is becoming the Catholic version of no-fault divorce, because you can basically argue whatever you want, and depending on the diocese that you file your annulment in or petition your annulment for, you can get it approved. So are the bishops doing anything, and will they do anything?
That's an answer that's a question I don't have an answer to, namely because I'm not a bishop. I do know a number of bishops personally, and this is a topic that, at least in conversation I've had with some of them, it has come up, and they're aware of it. The number of requests for a declaration of a nullity are so numerous. And by comparison to most of the rest of the world, the United States has a corner on the market because it's a phenomenon that's very pronounced here that is not really at all a phenomenon like it is here in most of the rest of the world. So the U.S. bishops are going to have to address it at some point. And I don't really know the answer to that question. I don't know what they're doing or will do or can do. It ultimately comes down to the, as I understand it, not being a canon lawyer, it comes down to the findings that the tribunal arrives at. And they have, as all human beings do, their own set of emotions and ideas and things like that. So my assumption is that they're guided by the law and they follow the law and they do their very best. But it does seem, Will, that there is a propensity to more freely grant a declaration of nullity, and almost like a default where it's unusual, it seems. Now, again, I'm not a canon lawyer. I don't live in that world. I try to read the literature. I try to stay as current as I can from like canon law blogs and things like that. But I don't have any deep knowledge in that world. So my perception is, and I could be wrong, but my perception is that, as you said, it is far, far, far more common that somebody would receive a declaration of nullity and rather rare that they would not. So I think this is the kind of question that ultimately would have to be addressed to the appropriate department, I guess, in the bishops' conference, because I just don't know. But my impression is the same as yours. It seems as though the number is quite high, and that leads people to wonder, is it so high because maybe there's, you know, it's just too lax? Are the standards that are supposed to be met for something to be reasonably demonstrated as an impediment, a dearment impediment, are these standards too low? Are the people who are making these decisions too lenient? I mean, these are all valid questions, and I honestly don't know the answer to those questions. So I hate to punt on this issue, but I don't know what else to tell you other than to maybe go to some of these canon lawyers who have really important insights. I'm thinking of someone like Ed Peters, for example. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's talked about this issue. Okay, yeah. So if you were to go to his blog, I mean, he talks a lot about these kinds of things. And so that would be one source I would go to. He's very knowledgeable. Also, another canon law blog called Canon Law Made Easy. That's another helpful one. And so I rely on people like those people for advice. There is a book that I found very helpful published by Ignatius Press by Paolo Bianchi. It's called When is a Marriage Null? And that is a really good case study or a series of case studies. And these canon lawyers weigh in on what would constitute a marriage that's null. I think that's a book that everybody who's in any way involved in marriage tribunal matters should read that book, even if they have their degrees in canon law. You know, I think that would be helpful. Yeah, go ahead, Will.
Could you repeat the name of that book? You kind of cut out on me for a second, so I didn't hear the name of the book.
No problem. It's called When is a Marriage Null by Paolo Bianchi. You're welcome. Yeah, it's easy to get online or get at your local Catholic bookstore. When is a Marriage Null? Paolo Bianchi. And I benefited greatly from reading that book. It clarified a lot of things for me. And I think it would be required reading for anybody who's involved in the tribunal business. So I'll leave it at that. Will, thank you. And you have my condolences on the difficulty in your marriage and everything that's happened since then. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Jody now in Las Vegas. Hi, Jody.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. How are you today? Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had a question about the accepting communion. My husband had a girlfriend that he moved in with that I, and we have a daughter together, and I was incredibly mortified, but that, of course, anyone would be, so that doesn't make me any different, but I really wasn't very nice to her. I didn't go out to approach her, but like, you know, she's, you know, she's quite a bit younger, and, you know, she's sort of like bopping over to my car when I have to leave my daughter with her. And I,
did your husband leave you and take up with this other woman?
Yeah. And so, I just wasn't, it's been some years. In fact, they're civilly married now, and, you know, he's moving right along, and, I won't, there's no reason for me to, try to get an annulment. It's a valid marriage. I'm still married, and I would only approach getting an annulment if I ever got to the point, which God forbid I ever do, to where my faith is not as important as my own personal, you know, wanting to, don't get me wrong. It's
wanting to get married again, you mean?
Yeah. I feel like, I feel like it would be a little putting God in the back seat if I just said, but I'm so lonely, but this isn't right. I mean, cause it was a valid marriage, and that's what it is. I mean, and that's not, I guess that's not really, I didn't call about the annulment. I called about the fact that, you know, I've done some, like I've given her a hand gesture with a certain finger, like
a good luck sign that can be interpreted in different ways by different cultures like that.
Yeah. Like have a nice day and, kind of thing. Yeah.
I do
hold, I mean, I think I'm more hurt now than I, at the time, I think I was hurt and really angry. I'm still disappointed, and I don't know if that'll ever go away, but that's a really hard thing for me. I think I'm resentful a lot, and I think I do harbor that. And I've talked about it in confession, and I just don't know if I should not take communion now. I don't know.
All right, let's talk about that. First of all, you are the victimized spouse. Your husband is the scoundrel who left you. He abandoned you, and you said child, daughter. I mean, I don't know if it's more than one child, but he abandoned you. And so you have every right to be aggrieved. You have every right to be resentful and to be angry about what happened. It would be unnatural. It would be not human for you as the wife who's been victimized by him the way he did this to not feel those feelings. I mean, I think you should be, you know, get some psychiatric help if you didn't feel anything like that. You obviously are normal because you have those reactions. So that is not a sin. I mean, if somebody victimizes you in such a terrible way and you are emotionally devastated by it, that's not a sin. That's normal. That's, you know, that's the anguish that follows from somebody's bad decision. So you if you wanted to, Jody, in confession, you could mention that you're struggling with these feelings of anger and resentment and all of those things. And, you know, the Lord knows the secrets of my heart better than I do. And I'm feeling these feelings and I don't want to, but I can't help it. And I mean, if it would help to assuage your conscience, if you're feeling guilty about that, I don't think you should. But if you did, you could mention it and then know that it's, you know, at the foot of the cross.
Mm-hmm. But, I guess I feel like, in a certain way, I feel like I owe her. I mean, as you know, a couple years has passed. I mean, they got married a year and a half ago. I guess I feel like it's my obligation. I mean, I feel like I should apologize for like my nasty behavior of being in a way that I wouldn't really do that to anyone. And sort of like, I feel like, you know, I'm ashamed of really, you know, how I reacted in the beginning, you know, cause I wouldn't smile and like be so excited. But I would make comments like that were a little like there was a function and my husband brought my daughter and, brought his girlfriend at the time. And I was mortified cause there was like other kids' moms. And so, you know, I wasn't expecting that. And so I just sort of said, oh, you ladies, you remember my husband? And then this is his girlfriend. Like, I just didn't, I mean, I've done things that were just not, not nice.
Those aren't sins.
Not really.
Those aren't sins. Those aren't sins.
I mean, I guess if I should rectify it or it like leave my gift at the altar and then at least, I mean, I don't feel like it's really coming from the heart, but I feel like maybe that would be like a good beginning start. Do you think that I should at least acknowledge like the things that I've done? I mean, she knows what she's done. He knows what he's done. I don't need to tell them of their own. Or I don't know. That's all. I guess I can take communion. I guess that's your answer.
Well, you know, I'm obviously not a priest, not a confessor, so I can't go beyond my role as a radio host, but I'm your brother in Christ, and I know enough to know that what you're describing is not a sin. If somebody is wounded physically, they cry out in pain. There's no sin in that. There's no sin for you to express your anger, even your fury that he has done something. So I mean, what a dope
yeah.
For him to do this to you and abandon his family. And I mean, not that it should bring you any satisfaction, but the truth is eventually if he doesn't repent, he's going to go to hell. And so will she. And I don't wish that on them, and I know you don't either, but part of your righteous indignation is that you see so clearly something so stupid and self-injurious that he's done to you and to the family and to himself, and how can you not be outraged by it? So no, I don't think nothing you've described just now suggests in any way that you've committed a sin. You're normal.
And I've had masses said for both of them. I finally gotten to the point where I can at least like pray for, you know, them. Yeah. But I appreciate that. I'll talk a little deeper about it with my confessor and so much blessing to you for all you do. You really changed my life. I don't know what I would do without it.
My heart goes out to you. Most sincerely, Jody, it really does go out to you, and I'm angry for you that this dolt of an ex-husband would do something so stupid and so hurtful, and my heart goes out to you. So you sound like a strong woman. You sound like somebody who's really, really self-aware and really thoughtful, and I mean, a lot of women who are in your situation probably listening right now are drawing some strength from you, even at this moment.
Oh, well, that's kind to say. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Well, thank you. And I wish the same for you, Jody. I really do. And hopefully your husband will come to his senses and fix this problem that he's created. As Jesus said, with man, this is impossible, but for God, anything is possible. So we can pray for that at the very least. And by the way, as long as I'm at it, as long as my feathers are ruffled, if you're listening to this program right now and you are in that guy's position and you have walked out on your marriage and you have abandoned your wife and your child or children, or if you're the wife and you've done that to your husband, repent, turn around, go back, cut the ropes with whoever the new person is in your life. Because if you haven't heard it from anyone else, you're going to hear it from me. You are on the road to hell. And if you don't change, if you don't repent, if you don't make amends, you're going to go to hell. And that's where you'll be for the rest of eternity. And if you want any advice on what to expect, read the Gospels. Jesus talks a lot about that and the fire that's unquenchable and the utter desolation and pain and anguish. And all those things that go along with it, Jesus himself talked a lot about that. And if you're in this situation yourself and you have walked out on your marriage and you found a younger model and all of the above, you're on the way to hell. And somebody needs to tell you that. And I'm telling you that. So repent and stop it and turn around and go back to your wife, go back to your husband, go to confession. And if you're even thinking about doing this, I hope that what I just said puts the emergency brake so that you don't go forward and do something devastating like that. All right, I'm going to unruffle my feathers and come right back with a smile on my face right after this.
I like your style, dude.